This is the primal scream of a dying regime. Pray for our enemies, because we're going medieval on these people. Putin's not got a free shot. All these networks lying about the people. The people have had a belly full of it. I know you don't like hearing that. I know you try to do everything in the world to stop that, but you're not going to stop it. It's going to happen.
And where do people like that go to share the big lie? MAGA Media. I wish, in my soul, I wish that any of these people had a conscience.
Ask yourself, what is my task and what is my purpose? If that answer is to save my country, this country will be saved.
War Room. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bann.
It's Saturday, 13 April, in the year of our Lord, 2024. I want to welcome everybody here. As you know, the Saturday show is my favorite show of the week. One of the reasons I have a little more flexibility in what we do is just not news or analysis or what's going on in the day and the signal and all that. We can step back. Today, we're doing a special coup d'etat. John F. Kennedy, Richard Nixon, and Donald J. Trump. I've got Dr. Jerome Corsi is going to join me in a moment. Amazing new book out about the Kennedy assassination. Dr. Corsi, one of the most revered investigative journalists out there. Also later, Jeff Shepard, who's written a number of books about a takedown of Richard Nixon. And very different. This is about the federal judiciary, the DOJ, the staffs on the Hill. Very similar to what's happening to President Trump. And that's a different angle on the Nixon removal. Jeff Shepard will join us. And then our own Mike Davis. You know, Mike Davis has kind of become a legend here over the last couple of years. He's on the short list to be either White House counsel or, as he says, he wants to be Viceroy of D.C. on an interim basis, the Attorney General and DOJ. He's going to anchor our coverage next week from New York in this trial of the century. Mike Davis will join us to go through the Trump, the coup d'etat against President Trump. I want to start first with Dr. Jerome Corsi, PhD from Harvard, written 50 books. Many of these books are some of the biggest, most important books out there in investigation. He's come up with really, I don't know, a 500-page, 600-page book on the assassination of John F. Kennedy called The Final Analysis. So when Dr. Corsi puts on The Final Analysis, it means something. Before we get to the specifics of what your current book shows, and I recommend everybody, particularly, number one, if you're a Kennedy aficionado about the assassination, or you have someone in your family that is, this is a perfect Mother's Day gift or Father's Day gift or graduation gift, whatever, if you're into the Kennedy assassination. Now, if you don't know anything about the Kennedy assassination, it's also a good place to start, although they will tell you they're not the alpha, they're omega in this analysis, but it's a fantastic book. I just want to step back because using the term coup d'etat, particularly in the United States, Dr. Corsi, is loaded. Do you believe, in your professional opinion, having been a researcher in many different areas and written many different books and being one of the top investigative journalists out there, do you believe that there was a coup d'etat against John F. Kennedy in 1963, sir?
I have no doubt about it. 100% certain. There was a coup d'etat. It was organized by the deep state, and they decided to kill Jack Kennedy. They did it in broad daylight with a crossfire, a very coordinated attack, and they gloated over it. The army was at the autopsy smoking cigars and directing the autopsy. This was a coup d'etat. Jack Kennedy wanted peace. He did not want to go to war with Russia in the Cuban Missile Crisis. He had signed the National Security Memorandum.
But hang on a second. He ran against Nixon instead against Nixon and Eisenhower.
Right.
They weren't hard enough on communism. They talked about the islands in the South China Sea today. I mean, some of the stuff we talked about in Taiwan, they said you're weak on communist China, but you're weaker on Russia. I mean, Jack Kennedy's legacy, I thought he wanted to be as the penultimate Cold Warrior with his brother, Bobby, are you saying actually the deep state thought he was going to try to, that peace was going to break out and that's why they took him out?
Yes, yeah, so Kennedy matured during his presidency. He realized, I think, after the Bay of Pigs that the CIA had lied to him and had tried to trap him into getting into a war with Cuba. The invasion failed. It was meant to fail. Kennedy refused to send in the B-26 to save these hired hands that had been landed on the beach as if they were revolutionaries. Kennedy saw through it. When it came to the Cuban Missile Crisis, The generals, including Curtis LeMay, who had firebombed Europe and firebombed Japan during World War II, wanted desperately to go to war, wanted to invade Cuba. And the Joint Chiefs were incensed that Kennedy wouldn't go along with them. Kennedy back-channeled. He communicated with Khrushchev and said, you know, your military-industrial complex and mine want to go to war. I don't want to do it. Do you? And they decided to stand down. And then Kennedy gave that speech, where the title of the book comes from the American University speech. We can say in the final analysis, we all live in this small planet, and we're all mortal. And he had a vision that we needed to work towards peace, not war. But the military-industrial complex had other ideas.
In the Cuban Missile Crisis particularly, because it was kind of withheld from the public, he actually didn't stand down so much the Soviet Union as Backchannel made a deal. I mean, we did remove, and they had to have a gap, we did remove missiles from Turkey.
That's correct.
That's kind of part
right.
of the deal. They were moving from Cuba. And are you saying that with the Bay of Pigs, where he said, the Dulles has lied to me, the CIA lied to me, they're out of control, because this was all planned during Nixon and Eisenhower, that his not backing up, sending in American military involvement to back up the Cuban freedom fighters, coupled with the Cuban Missile Crisis, where he really made a deal. He didn't essentially totally stand down, as you know the hagiography said. Is that what triggered the administrative state and the deep state to say, this guy's got to go?
Yes, I think the Dulles is back to the Eisenhower administration. When John Foster Dulles was Secretary of State and Alan Dulles head of the CIA, they merged these two together. And so therefore, they had their own agenda. Back in OSS was running drugs. The CIA is still running drugs. I caught HSBC in 2011 doing massive drug laundering for the drug cartels. The CIA has been in the drug business. We monitor all these transfers of funds, wire transfers, and HSBC got a $1.9 billion fine. Nobody went to jail. The deep state is for goals in mind to make a small elite very wealthy, to have a small group be in charge. The Dulles brothers were working with Brown Brothers Harriman and Prescott Bush, father of George H.W. Bush, prior to World War II, and they were financing Hitler. They like the idea of a small elite, self-appointed, working with the multinational corporations. and this idea is still being played out today.
I keep saying the industrial structure of Germany, Sullivan and Cromwell, the law firm, was over there setting it up, working with the Germans.
Right.
The industrial structure of Germany and Imperial Japan, pre-war and post-war, the exact same thing. No tribunals, no military tribunals, nothing. And those are the guys in back of Hitler and Tojo and these guys and got off nothing. Okay, if you make the case that there was a coup d'etat, who are the players? Because the final analysis, you get down to you bring the receipts to say, I'm going to show you how they executed him in broad daylight, right? And how they panned it off.
That's right.
Second segment. And in this segment, who were the elements of the deep state that made the decision Kennedy had to go? And what elements came to Dealey Plaza in 1963 to actually, in broad daylight, assassinate President Kennedy?
Well, in the first book I wrote, which was Who Really Killed Kennedy, that was 10 years ago. What I did is I went into the politics of it, and I said that Alan Dulles was certainly the consigliere of planning this. He planned it with the mob. The mob had been working together with the CIA since the Eisenhower administration. The Bay of Pigs was originally planned to be a Nixon operation. It was his way to have his October surprise. Kennedy found out about it, and what I think the fourth debate said, we should invade Cuba just to block Nixon from doing it. It worked. But the point is that this whole deep state mentality has permeated the CIA and the State Department so that they want perpetual war. They want to have constant one war after another. They want to have the military-industrial complex be making millions of dollars. And what they've learned to do is architect these like Jim Carrey Truman shows where we're told, here's the narrative, you know, here's Russia, Russia's evil, it wants to invade Europe. Well, I don't think Putin's about to invade Europe. Putin wants to have not NATO be moved to the edge of the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, edge of Russia. He said this in his interview with Tucker Carlson. He So for 1,000 years, we've had these two provinces in eastern Ukraine that are wanting to be with Russia, and there's our access to the Atlantic through the Black Sea. But our State Department, and you saw it again in the impeachment hearing of Donald Trump over Ukraine, our State Department said Donald Trump was not following our policy, therefore he has to go. And again, the State Department is not supposed to be running U.S. foreign policy. The president does. But these agencies are unaccountable. They make criminal decisions. They have agendas. And their agenda is, quite frankly, to destroy the United States in order to move to their new World Economic Forum utopia. And they're utilizing this neo-Marxism as, you know, gender theory and race, critical race theory, as their destructive apparatus in order to form the transition. It started with Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy would not buy on the agenda of this military industrial state. He'd been warned by Eisenhower. He caught on. He saw it in the Bay of Pigs, and he was resolved to break its back. Unfortunately, it was stronger than he is and more covert. So who were the players? Well, in Dallas, you had mob figures were there. You had George H.W. Bush, who I'm sure was there. Richard Nixon was in Dallas the day Jack Kennedy was killed. It was like a convention of mob and deep state who were there. E. Howard Hunt was there, I believe, and he shows up again in Watergate. The same cast of characters in the CIA that since 1957 had been staging coups in Guatemala, for instance, for a banana company where the Dulles' own stock. And Edward Bernays was at the center of that. And I got to know Edward Bernays. I spent time with him when I was just in college, getting into graduate school at Harvard. And we talked extensively about this deep state is a unseen real power that runs things. And the presidents get to be presidents as long as they go along, as long as they follow instructions. But any president who doesn't want to follow their instructions is in mortal danger. And Jack Kennedy found that out the hard way. And who the shooters were is unimportant. They were top criminal shooters.
Dr. Corsi, but here's what I don't understand. President Johnson appointed the Vestal Virgins, the who's who of respected Americans, to look into this in the Warren Commission. He picked the Chief Justice of the United States, Earl Warren. Of course, Alan Dulles popped up on there, but you had the senator from Georgia. You had J. Edgar Hoover was a major player in it, but you had the Warren Commission went through this. They had, with everybody fresh in the memory, they talked to all the participants. They went through all the ballistics. They did everything, and they came up with the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald, a former Marine radio operator, had been the lone government. We got about a minute in this segment. Do you not believe the Warren Commission?
The purpose of the Warren Commission was to run a disinformation campaign to advance this theory and to not look at any evidence to the contrary. Jack Kennedy, when he showed up at Parkland Hospital, the doctors said he'd been shot from the front. Texas School Book Depository was behind him when he was shot. Lee Harvey Oswald, I don't think, shot at anyone that day. The shots that were taken, including two from the front, these were top hitmen. Their names are really unimportant. These were very difficult shots. They hit three headshots. These guys were professionals, and they knew what they were doing. It was a calculated sniper incident, timed shooting, staged, and the government Secret Service was in on it. Secret Service was erasing information. They were washing down the limousine at Parkland Hospital and not letting people see the gunshot through the windshield from the front. It was a sham. The Alan Dulles was on the Warren Commission.
Dr. Yeah, right. No, it's pretty odd, Alan Dulles. Hang on for one second. We'll take a short commercial break. I want to thank Birch Gold for their Saturday sponsorship and particularly of this coup d'etat. Philip Patrick's going to join me at the end of the show. We're going to talk about turbulence. We've had turbulence in this country for many, many years, but it started, I think, the railhead of this. The end of Pax Americana really came in 1963 with the assassination of John F. Kennedy. A new, brilliant new book by Dr. Jerome Corsi, The Final Analysis. Pretty breathtaking. We're going to have Dr. Corsi on the other side to continue with the start of the instability, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, next in the war.
I want to warn you of a huge change that could be coming to our money and our bank accounts. First, think back to 9/11, shortly after the government pushed through the Patriot Act. This gave the government power to spy on innocent Americans by monitoring our phone and email and tracking our movement across the internet. Now, Jim Rickards, editor of the independent financial newsletter Strategic Intelligence and New York Times bestselling author, is warning about a coming event that could elevate this governmental surveillance to a terrifying new level. In fact, some of the guests I've had on the War Room believe that the government will soon expand their powers to track our every move. If we say the wrong things on social media, donate to the wrong causes, buy firearms, or even vote MAGA, the government may be able to shut us out of our bank accounts. I can't say for sure if this will happen, but it's an interesting and dire warning. Fortunately, Jim Rickards, an American patriot and friend of mine, has made it his mission to educate us on what he believes is coming and how to protect yourself from the possibility of programmable money. Watch Jim's warning video now before it's censored like I've been in the past. Go to RickardsWarRoom.com. That's RickardsWarRoom.com now to see the video.
War Room. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bann.
Okay, Warpath.coffee. We always get jacked up for every day show early in the morning, but particularly Saturday, Warpath.coffee/War Room. Get your discount, but go there right now. Get the dark roast. We took 2 years to get the acid out of it. I love the Mariner's Blend because I'm a dark roast guy, but it's got great blends, breakfast blends, mild blends, holiday blends. Tej Gill on the team of Navy SEALs. Roasted here in the United States of America. You know I love it. And the people in the War Room that use it love it too. Also, Sacred Human Health. The feedback we've got on the grass-fed beef livers is off the charts. Go to sacredhumanhealth.com right now. Check it out. Just go to the website and look at what your compatriots, your colleagues, your comrades on the War Room, on the site, say about it, about energy, about this great new vitality they have. Everybody knows that beef liver is the greatest concentration of nutrients known to man or the animal kingdom. Go check it out today, sacredhumanhealth.com. So, Dr. Corsi, we start here today with JFK. A lot of hedge fund people and prominent business people watch the War Room or take the podcast later. I was shocked. The number of people called me the other day about your first one and said, hey, what was Corsi talking about in Parkland Hospital that the Secret Service had to pull guns and take actually the body away? I said, that's been Dr. Corsi's document. But the secret, because remember, it was not a federal law. There was no federal law about killing presidents. Garfield, McKinley, Lincoln, there's no federal law. Kennedy was a local murder. Talk to us about what happened in Parkland. And I want you to walk through your evidence about, comes out in the autopsy, of what really happened in Dealey Plaza, sir.
Well, at gunpoint, you're right. The Secret Service had called the local mortuary, and they had a ceremonial casket, and they wrapped Jack Kennedy, the nurses did, in sheets and a sheet around his head, and they put him in the ceremonial casket. And the mortician, Dr. Earl Rose, and the Justice of Peace showed up, and they said, you can't take the body. We're going to do the autopsy here. So the Secret Service put them up against the wall, pulled their weapons, and said, we're taking this casket to Washington. They didn't care about the law. They had to have control of the body. Now, the problem was that when Jack Kennedy came into Parkland, the doctors all said that he had been shot from the front. There was a puncture wound in the neck, which was obviously a frontal shot, and the back right of Jack Kennedy's head had been blown away. You could look down and see the brain, and a large part of the brain was gone. You could see the cerebellum falling out of the back of the head. The doctors knew this was frontal shots, and they went on a press conference and said there were frontal shots that killed Jack Kennedy. Malcolm Kildoff, the press secretary traveling with Kennedy, said at a press conference at Parkland Hospital, he put his finger right up here, and he said this was a shot through the head. Now, what you're seeing there is Dr. Mantic has a PhD in physics, and he's an MD, radiation oncologist. He's seen the JFK X-rays more than anyone else. He did optical density measurements of these X-rays, and he knows what's in them. Now, what you're looking at here is the shot that occurred on the right temple, and it right at the ear. It was an oblique shot, so it has a keyhole wound, and you can see that's characteristic of the keyhole wound. And that was the shot that blew out the back of the head. And it was a massive shot. And the doctors were uniform in saying that he had been shot from the head. If you can show that one with the yellow line through it, with the of the lateral shot with that little red blob in it, you can see from the side shot that Jack Kennedy was shot in the temple right here, and the shot went across the upper right of his head. You can see all those little yellow dots. Those are the bullet breaking up. And it entered the front. The black space at the front is the forehead, where the bullet ends up. At the very back, the largest fragment traveled to the back of the head.
Does the Zapruder film, does the Zapruder film back you up, yes or no?
Yes. Yeah. Because this is the shot that happened when Clint Hill was running to get onto the limousine. And this about shot number, frame number 388. And that's where Jack Kennedy is hit in the side of the head. First, you can see his head explode. Then he's thrown violently to the back and to the left. And all of the brain matter from this comes out here. It splatters all over Clint Hill. Clint Hill wrote about it. It hit Bobby Hargis, who is the inboard motorcycle operator on the left. Jackie is getting out of the limousine, trying to pick up a piece of Kennedy's skull blown onto the trunk of the car. I think we have a picture of her climbing out. And you can see she's reaching for a piece of the brain. And so a piece of the skull, the piece that got blown out, flies onto the lawn to the left behind the limousine. And that's again, picked up, maybe a move, but it's on the lawn. So it was blown out of the back of Jack Kennedy's head. So you can see, Jackie, that's where the head, that's where you can see the head exploding. It's actually exploding right there. That's the shot to the temple. You can see it blowing up. And so if we go a little bit further down, you can see how Jackie is coming out of the limousine. Clint Hill is coming on. That officer you see in the motorcycle is Bobby Hargis. He's splattered with blood and tissue. That was a shot from the grassy knoll. There's no doubt about it. And the optical density range, see, if we get it closer, you can really see Jack Kennedy's head exploding in the side. That's a side shot. On shot 313, frame Zapruder 313, is when the first shot, the back head, back of the head, Jack Kennedy's moving forward. You can see, as it were, men are coming out of his head to the front. But it was just moving forward, and then the shot hit within about 2 or 3 seconds and threw him back. This shot of the temple could have occurred any time in the shooting. And it, I think, was a mercury. Dr. Mantic says a mercury bullet. That's why you can still see it. It was not taken out in the pre-autopsy surgery, which we need to discuss in a minute. Go ahead, Steve.
We're pressed for time. I just want, in the book, you have 1,000 footnotes. Everything in the book is taken from either a government document or some official interview, or everything you document here is, I mean, there's no question about your evidence you present, correct?
I 100% presented it in evidence. Doug Horn, who wrote a preface to this, did 5 volumes inside the AARB. He was one of the chief people in the Assassinations Records Review Board, created after the 1991 Oliver Stone movie. He did the investigations. He took testimony under oath. They declassified documents. We relied heavily on Doug Horn's work. Everything in here is fully footnoted. It's all in the official record. It's all out there in the public. The unique part of this book is that Dr. Mantic has science here with the optical density measurements. So these x-rays, all 3 of them in the archives, are doctored. They have all been masked, and they've been changed in order to make it look like Lee Harvey Oswald did the shooting. The problem was...
Hang on one second. I want to, because I'm a naval officer. My daughter went to West Point. I've never been able to figure out why President Kennedy's body did not go to Walter Reed, the great Army hospital, the greatest experts in the world in gunshot wounds. When he went to Bethesda, even though he was a naval officer, you know, the Navy's about, you know, big naval artillery, torpedoes, bombings, not gunshot wounds. Why did he not go to Walter Reed? Why was the body not sent to Walter Reed to have the most important autopsy in the history of the country, sir?
Well, the plan was to go to Walter Reed. But Jackie Kennedy insisted he was Navy, he was going to Bethesda. And what they did was they arranged Jack Kennedy arrives in the morgue in his body at 6:30 in the evening, November 22nd, 1963. He arrives in a silver metal shipping casket, which the corpsman at the Navy Bethesda Hospital opened up, and Jack Kennedy's in a body bag. He's naked except for a wrapping around his head. That's not how he left Parkland. He left Parkland in a ceremonial casket. When that ceremonial casket was offloaded from Air Force One and put into the Navy ambulance with Jackie and Bobby Kennedy, it was empty. And there's a whole farce of how these there were three separate casket entries, and Boswell and Hume, the two Navy doctors who did the autopsy, did pre-autopsy surgery of Jack Kennedy's skull in order to change the frontal wounds into back wounds and to obscure the evidence. They took the entire parietal bone off of his head. They sawed it off. They looked for bullet fragments. They altered the evidence of Jack Kennedy's skull prior to the official autopsy at 8 o'clock in the gallery. They put Jack Kennedy's body back in the ceremonial casket. The honor guard took it in. And when they opened up the casket at the front of the gallery, everybody was shocked. And two FBI agents wrote in their 302 after action report that evidently the doctor said there was a pre-autopsy surgery to the head. So that's also in the official FBI record. And that's shocking.
We've got to bounce, but I got this book. I couldn't put it down, and I'm an aficionado of the Kennedy assassination. We've got about a minute. Where do people go to get your writings, to find this book? Where do they order? How do they get it?
The book is available on Amazon only. We didn't put it in the stores. We tried to rush this out for the European elections. But the book is entitled The Assassination of John F. Kennedy, The Final Analysis. That's the full title. It's on Amazon. You can get it from Amazon. That's the only place right now you can get it. The book is doing extremely well. There's interest. We already have interest from Spain, Italy, and Hungary to do a European edition of this book, because what this book shows is Jack Kennedy's assassination was a coup d'etat. It was organized by the government. They altered the evidence. They've lied for 60 years, and the deep state took over the United States, began running it. So if today we have a president in the White House who is so mentally deficient that the special prosecutor says he's suffering from senior dementia, that's the way they want it, because the deep state's been in control since Jack Kennedy was killed.
Dr. Corsi, amazing book, amazing. Real quickly, where do people go to your website to get all your writings?
TheTruthCentral.com, TheTruthCentral.com. Thank you.
Dr. Jerome Corsi, the book is The Assassination of John F. Kennedy, The Final Analysis. Get this book. Read this book. Short break. We're going to go now to the Justice Department, the Judiciary, Congress, on the removal of Richard Nixon next. Coup d'etat Saturday in the War Room.
True or false? Using your tax refund to pay off credit card debt is a smart thing. Actually, that's false. DoneWithDebt.com published a brilliant strategy designed to let you keep your hard-earned tax refund and reduce or eliminate credit card debt. Most Americans owe thousands in credit card debt. In fact, Daily Mail's got a story that 56 million Americans carry credit card debt, and that debt will take years to pay off, if you pay it off at all. Done with Debt found that filing bankruptcy is usually not the answer, and taking out loans to pay off credit cards usually increases the debt. When you engage Done with Debt, their legal experts and skilled negotiators take on the credit card companies for you. Their winning strategies are designed with one goal: solve your debt situation quickly and permanently. First things first, chat with a Done with Debt strategist and explore your solutions. Some debt fighting strategies are time sensitive, so you'll need to move quickly. For a free consultation, visit donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. Do it today. Take action.
War Room. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bann.
Okay, welcome back. We're now in Coup d'Etat Saturday. We're going to go to Nixon. I want to give a special thanks to our next guest. And I believe he's going to go down in history as one of the most important voices, like a prophet, an Old Testament prophet, that warned this country about what can happen. Jeff Shepard. And Jeff, I admit, in the two books, if Denver can get them up, the two books are the Nixon conspiracy, and then the second was the real Watergate scandal. And I'll be honest with you, when I read them first before living through it, I didn't really understand. I'm not a lawyer. I didn't really understand it. And I kind of always fell into the trap of some of these other Nixon conspiracies, the CIA. But this is really the beginning of lawfare, and it's so shocking. And you provide such brutal empirical evidence that the federal judiciary, the Department of Justice, and the congressional staffs worked in unison and really created lawfare that took a sitting president and took him out. At the same time, they were all lauded as heroes. The very heroes that were all put in front of us, all these great guys from the judges to, were actually the villains in specifically taking out, targeting and taking out President of the United States. Now, am I wrong in that tee up, sir?
No, that's absolutely correct. What was missing was a vigorous and independent press. This stuff was there. It was there if you looked, but there was a single narrative at the time. Remember, three networks, two newspapers, and two news magazines all singing from the same hymnal. So there was no other point of view. And the way to understand it, I mean, you got to get into it. You got to understand what was done, but you picture a triangle, and the triangle's points are the three branches of government. And there were secret meetings, secret memos, and secret coordination. And we didn't know anything about it. But what happened is they were so arrogant, they were so sure of themselves, they left a paper trail. And what I've done is uncover that paper trail. And the documents just started to surface 10 years ago. It's just amazing. The Watergate narrative, you know, bad president, 24 members of his administration convicted, put in jail, 65 separate cases brought in the District of Columbia. Just a total wipeout of the Nixon administration. And then 40 years later, documents start to surface, mainly at our National Archives. I mean, nobody has ever disputed the authenticity of these documents. But the fact of the matter is they laid out the paper trail. Now, for your listeners, let me take a step back. It's been 50 years. Seems like yesterday to me. And talk about the six principal defendants in Watergate. And the first three are the guys who really did the crimes. Gordon Liddy planned the campaign intelligence plan. It was really over the top. It envisioned illegal stuff. We use the term campaign intelligence plan, but what your listeners have to understand is it's spying. That's what we're going to do. We're going to spy on the opposition. Today, if it was done legally, we'd call it oppo research. You want to know everything you can about your opponent. Weak spots, campaign press ideas, where the money comes from, where they're going to campaign, where they're putting their emphasis, so you understand your opponent. Liddy's problem was he got carried away and produced a plan with mugging, bugging, kidnapping, and prostitution, all laid out. I mean, I'm not making this up. The stuff was really there. Then the second guy who got his hands dirty was Liddy's supervisor at the reelection committee, and that was Jeb Magruder, and he's the one that sent Liddy back in, said your wiretaps aren't good enough, and he was the main reason for the cover-up, because Jeb Magruder was the next person above where the people were who were indicted. So the effort was to contain the damage at the reelection committee and at a certain level of the reelection committee. And the third great dirty hand person of Watergate is John Dean, characterized by the FBI as the master manipulator. Admittedly, the desk officer for the cover-up. I saw a oral history taken by the National Archives of Angelo Lano, the lead FBI agent throughout Watergate, and he credited John Dean with 95% of the cover-up activities. Then the next three people are the guys who took the fall. the senior people on Nixon's cadre of staff, John Mitchell, his attorney general, Bob Haldeman, his chief of staff, and John Ehrlichman, my boss, who was head of domestic affairs. They were all convicted in the cover-up trial on all counts of obstruction, conspiracy, and perjury. And the Watergate Special Prosecution Force, which was created to go after the Nixon people, that was its sole mission, started out with a table of organization and employment that envisioned 100 people, 60 of whom turned out to be lawyers, almost all of whom turned out to be Ivy League graduates, especially recruited, highly partisan, when the Watergate case became politicized. And they brought 65 different involvements, different cases in the district. They won all but two. You don't want to be a Republican tried in a political case in the district. You really don't stand a chance. Four cases were tried outside the district, and they split, half acquittals, half convictions. But the great damage and the huge case is the cover-up trial. That occurred after Nixon had resigned. It was a three-month trial. Mitchell, Haldeman, and Ehrlichman convicted on all counts. Well, when I complain, and you say, you know, Jeff, you say it nicely, your book's a little legalistic. What I'm claiming, what I'm asserting, is these defendants were not given what the Fifth Amendment guarantees, which is due process of law. And due process gets a little complicated, but essentially means a fair trial. And for our purposes, that consists of four elements. You get a fair and impartial trial judge. The trial judge is not supposed to come into it with his mind made up or biased. You get even-handed, nonpartisan prosecutors. They can't take a law and apply it in a creative way for the first time just against you. They're supposed to be representing the government, putting on evidence they've uncovered, but fairly. Third thing, you're supposed to get a jury of your peers, untainted by pretrial publicity and unbiased politically. And finally, you get an automatic right of appeal to a court of appeals. Now, just to remind your listeners, in the federal system, there are district courts across the nation, 94 different districts, including one in the District of Columbia. From those cases, there are 11 or 12 circuit courts of appeals, and you have an automatic right to appeal to the circuit court. Then above the circuit courts is the Supreme Court. It picks and chooses. They have to choose to take a case. It's not automatic, but you are guaranteed a right of appeal to usually a three-judge panel on your circuit court. Well, it turns out none of these four characteristics were given to the Watergate defendants. Now, we didn't know that because at the time there was a single narrative. There were three networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, two influential newspapers, New York Times and The Washington Post, and two influential news magazines, Time and Newsweek. And except for The Post, which is headquartered in Washington, D.C., the others are all headquartered within six blocks of each other in Midtown Manhattan. The single narrative you got was a New York City point of view. Nixon wasn't a New Yorker. He wasn't an Ivy Leaguer. He was an outsider, and the press had been against him since he brought down Alger Hiss in 1947 as a first-term congressman. So we had a heck of a struggle, but what we didn't know was the other side was so eager to bring Nixon down, so eager to void his landslide reelection in 1972, that they cheated. Now, the government has all the cards, but they're supposed to play fair. And what we've now discovered is they didn't play fair. They set out to take a politicized case and to get Nixon. In fact, one of the memos I've uncovered is the second prosecutor, Leon Jaworski, coming into office after his whole staff has been chosen by the first prosecutor. And he complains to his deputy that there's this attitude, this drumbeat on the staff that Nixon must be reached, quote, at all costs. It's in his memo. He's saying, you guys are so biased, it's not worth my meeting with you. You're having meetings in advance of coming to see me, so I'm only getting one point of view. Well, what else did they do? They did a lot, but why do we know? That's what's so important. And that is, in the last 10 years, beginning in 2013, four caches of documents, internal prosecution documents, surfaced. And it turns out almost all of them are at the National Archives. You see, the special prosecutors were government employees too. And so their files, those that remained, are held at National Archives. But these three top prosecutors took their files with them when they left office. And Steve, you know, the National Archives frowns on that. You aren't supposed to take documents with you. But they didn't know these were taken. So these guys kept the documents till they passed away, gave them as part of their estate to their law school, and then they surfaced beginning in 2013. And the first set to surface was the confidential Watergate files of Leon Jaworski, the second special prosecutor. He took his files with him back to Texas, gave them to Baylor Law School. They surfaced and were retrieved by National Archives. And they were first made available in response to my FOIA request in 2013. The second set of documents were staff meeting notes by Professor James Vorenberg. He was a criminal law professor, number two man in the special prosecutor's office. And he took it upon himself to keep notes of their meetings so he could write the report from the prosecution when they were done. So what we get from him is week-by-week notes of what was going on in the staff meetings. He took them back to Harvard with him, kept them there until he died. He gave them to the law library, and they surfaced in 2015. So for the first time, we could read week-by-week what was going on internally with the prosecution staff. Third group of documents were taken by a man named Phil Lacavara. He's still alive. He was counsel to the special prosecutor. He staffed each of the special prosecutors. He took his files, boxes and boxes of them, and he gave them to the National Archives in 2020. Again, I'm the first guy to see any of those. And finally, in 2018, I convinced a court my petition to unseal the roadmap. And for your listeners, just to remind them or to tell them, prosecutors.
Hey, Jeff, hang on 1 second. I want to do this as a cliffhanger. We're going to take a short commercial break. Mesmerizing. Jeff Shepard on the plot that the conspiracy that took down Richard Nixon kind of sounds like the same one taking down Trump. Short break.
Tax Network USA is pure war room for solving your IRS tax problems. If you owe back taxes, COVID was your lucky break. Tax court shut down, the IRS paused, and you skated. Well, baby, that party is over. The IRS is adding 20,000 enforcement agents, basically tax cops. Honest, hardworking Americans like you are in the crosshairs. Rich people have tax lawyers, and you don't. You'll pay up, plus interest and penalties. Tax USA Network has brilliant war room-type strategies designed to solve your IRS problem quickly in your favor. Never call the IRS yourself. You're at their mercy. You could sit on hold for 6 to 8 hours and get hung up on. Grind you for all your back taxes, plus interest and penalties. Tax Network USA attorneys have a preferred direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to talk to and who to avoid. If they get difficult agent, hey, they just call a different agent. Tax Network USA learned of a limited time special IRS offer. The IRS is willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. Find out if you qualify before it's too late. Schedule your free confidential consultation with Tax Network USA. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debts. Think about that. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debts. They offer a best-in-class client satisfaction guarantee. Now call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000. And visit Tax Network USA. That's TNUSA.com/Bannon. TNUSA.com/Bannon. Make sure you take action on this today. This IRS grind is only going to get much worse.
Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Jeff Shepard, continue on, sir.
Well, we were right at the roadmap. The roadmap is the secret report the prosecutors convinced the grand jury to adopt and to transmit to the House Judiciary Committee, called the roadmap because it would lead to Nixon's impeachment. And they pulled a real trick, Steve. You got to admire it. They said, look, this is grand jury material. It's got to stay secret, got to stay sealed. So we're going to send it to the Hill sealed. Nobody can know what's in it. Not Nixon, not his defense lawyers, not the public. Only the House Judiciary Committee. It's the basis for Nixon's impeachment. And it stayed secret for 45 years until I got a court to unseal it in 2018. And for the very first time, we learned what prosecutors had said Nixon had done as personal conduct that was grounds for his impeachment. Once it became public, it was easily refuted, but it didn't do any good 45 minutes later. So what did we discover from these four caches of documents? Picture a triangle. The points are the three branches of government. Top is the executive branch. Those are the special prosecutors. Turns out, secret meetings, secret memos, secret coordination, they were meeting secretly with the judges. Go down to the right side of the triangle. At that point, the three federal judges, Chief Judge John Sirica, District Judge Gerhard Gesell, Chief Circuit Judge David Bazelon, all had secret meetings with the prosecutors, and they left a paper trail. I've got the documents that detail the agreements they made. Jaworski met with Sirica at least 10 times. And this is just unheard of. And then go over to the left side of the triangle. That's the House Judiciary staff, Senate Judiciary, House Judiciary, and the Senate Irvin Committee. They were meeting with the prosecutors in secret, reading grand jury information late at night. And Sam Dash, who was a professor at Georgetown, chief counsel of the Irvin Committee, he was meeting secretly with Judge Sirica. I mean, and we got all this detail. So Nixon really didn't stand a chance because of this secret coordination. Now,
okay.
Go ahead.
Hang on one second, because we're running out of time. I want to get all this. I want everybody, and you should have an interest in this because it's blockbuster, to get these two books. They're breathtaking, and they will give you a totally different perspective. All the guys the media played up. First of all, the Woodward and Bernstein stuff is like kid stuff. It's a joke. That's all a front. That's a tell a Hollywood story. It's a joke. It's a lullaby. It's a joke. You see the reality here. Real quickly, because I don't want to run out of time, I got to talk about Trump. Why are you like the expert of this? Tell me, give me a minute on your journey. Why are you sitting here in the war room, you know, 50 years or 60 years after the event? Why have you dedicated your life to this?
Well, I'm a sore loser. I came to Washington as a White House fellow. I joined Nixon's White House staff. I was the youngest lawyer, and I was deputy counsel on his Watergate defense team. I transcribed the tapes. I ran the document rooms. We lost big time, Steve, big time. And I always wondered how that came about. And then I started looking into it, and I started discovering all these documents. And what is just amazing is this paper trail these guys left. They were so filled with self-righteousness. You know, they were above the law. And they made notes and memos to the file on the conversations with the judges and the evidence they weren't sharing with the defendants. It's shocking what they did.
Real quickly, Nixon is known. He went got Alger his. He's one of the toughest nuts to ever be in the Oval Office. How did Nixon let this go down? Why didn't Nixon fight back?
Well, he made the mistake of trusting his lawyer, John Dean. Dean, it turns out, is a very, very skillful liar, and they thought he was protecting White House interests when, in fact, he was protecting his own. And when it collapsed, he traded what I believe to be less than truthful testimony against his colleagues in exchange for immunity and a light prison sentence. There's no person in American history that's the duplicate of John Dean. Your own lawyer, the one you trusted all the way through this, turns out to be your mortal enemy.
We'll get to, I'm going to have you back on. We'll drill down it because John Dean's all over the commentary on Trump. Real quickly, parallels of this lawfare perfected by then by these progressive left lawyers on Donald John Trump, sir.
Well, we didn't have the term lawfare back then, but that's exactly what it does. Politicized lawsuits designed to bring a candidate down. Alan Dershowitz was my criminal law professor at Harvard. He has a book out called Get Trump. My books could as well have been named Get Nixon because the staff was recruited with that idea in mind. The lawsuits were brought with that idea in mind. And now we can trace the paper trail that proves it. And it's all over my books. The appendices and the indexes and my books and the website have all that material.
I want to give the website. What's the website they go to? How if people want to communicate with you because you have a massive following after this? Where do they go?
It's all on the website. www.shepherdonwatergate.com. You got to spell Shepherd right. Shepard.
The Nixon conspiracy and the real Watergate scandal. Your jaw will drop because it's exactly what they're running on President Trump. Jeff Shepherd, I can say that you are an American patriot and you're an American hero, and your name will go down in history as a truth teller that exposed all this. Honored to have you on here today on Coup d'Etat Saturday, sir.
Good to be with you, Steve.
One of the guys that, well, good guy, dedicated his entire life, cause why? He saw a wrong up close and personal. He's much more dedicated than I am, but I got to tell you, I saw it up close and personal, too, the attacks on President Trump by the deep state. Mike Davis is going to join us next to talk about this fiasco that's about to unfold next week, and it is going to be a fiasco. We're going to have to hunker down. We're going to have to go to the mattresses. This is going to be a tough fight. President Trump's got it. He's got the toughness to do it, but everybody's going to have his back. It's going to be an extraordinary week. Mike Davis next is going to walk us through all of it. Want to make sure I got Birch Gold. I got Philip Patrick's going to come on later. Birchgold.com/abandon. Make sure you get the fifth installment, the end of the dollar empire that you can get. Be up if you put your order in now. It's totally free. Probably get it hopefully simultaneously, maybe on Monday as we work the logistics of it. Birchgold.com/abandon. Also, make sure you get my baby, and that would be sacredhumanhealth.com. The grass-fed beef livers. Get a jolt of energy today, but more importantly, read all the comments from your war room compadres on the site Sacred Human Health, and of course coffee, Warpath Coffee, warpath.coffee/warroom. Get the discount. We're going to take a short 90-second break. We're going to continue with Coup d'Etat Saturday. The Mike Davis joins us on lawfare and the conspiracy to take out Donald John Trump next in the war room.
Right now, millions of Americans face prescription medication shortages. The FDA's medication shortage list currently has over 120 prescription medications listed. Some patients are being forced into more expensive substitutes, while others are rationing what little medication they have left. Don't get caught unprepared. That's why I want you to pick up a Jace case today. The Jace case is a pack of essential antibiotics that can treat a long list of common bacterial illnesses, including UTIs, respiratory and skin infections, plus much more. And each case can be customized for your specific needs with dozens of add-on options. Just fill out a simple online form and Jace handles the rest. From the online evaluation to licensed pharmacy delivery and ongoing care, visit jacemedical.com and use code Bannon at checkout for an extra discount. That's promo code Bannon at Jace, J-A-S-E, jacemedical.com. Get the Jace case and get it today. Action, action, action.
War Room at checkout to save 67%. Do it again. War Room Health, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Go there today.
You need, if you're going to be part of the posse, you need a strong heart. You need a lion's heart. How we're going to do that is with Salty. Go there, do it today. Check it out.